Episode 17 of Season 5 of The Bad Apples. Hi everyone, this is Klaatu, and this is my Linux and geeky technical Ogcast and Speakscast. And if you've heard it at all, you know what it's about, so I'm not going to go into it. So in this episode, we're going to talk about some KDE stuff that I've found lately, which is kind of nifty. And we're going to talk about some Fedora stuff, or Fedora-related stuff, some Perl stuff, and listener feedback, because the previous episode was, like, really, really popular. So I'm going to talk about that. So without going on about it all, I guess let's start. This one was a real interesting find. It's called DuckDuckGo.com. Actually, you know who I know who told me about this? Ron, my friend Ron, who always emails me with random stuff. And it is a Perl-based search engine from, I think, Philadelphia. Not that the location actually matters. I shouldn't say that. It's actually a search application, because from what I can tell, the search engine itself isn't all Perl. There, apparently it does do its own crawls and stuff, but it's also using data from other places. So what this means is that you're going to get search results from places like Bing, which would be a little bit controversial. You're not going to get, as far as I recall, search results from, for instance, Google. And DuckDuckGo is completely, not completely, but they are very, very paying attention to privacy and anonymity and stuff like that. They do a lot of different things where they, you know, they take you through DuckDuckGo to the site. They don't give any of your information over to the thing that it's been searching. It's a secure connection, at least the one I'm using is. I think they all are. So it's encrypted and stuff like that. So it's actually pretty darn fast. Like, I haven't felt bad about using it. I've been using it at work as my primary search engine. I don't know, so far it's actually been performing really, really well. So it's kind of interesting. I thought the idea, I mean, when I heard it was a Perl search site, I really kind of thought that was interesting. A little bit disappointed that it's not pure Perl, like everything isn't Perl. But it's definitely something to check out. And so the site is duckduckgo.com, and I think it's also, you can abbreviate it as duckgo.com, DUKGO.com. So take a look at that. And then, of course, just like Antia.com, which is what I'm still using here on my personal computer, you can, for Conqueror, for instance, you can go into the search engine bar up on the right-hand corner and click on Add Search Engines or Manage Search Engines and just create your own little search shortcut and have that little bar be by default pointing to DuckDuckGo. So you can certainly feel free to check that out if it's of any interest to you. I've been having fun with it. I don't know if I'll stick with it just because of the fact that it's not what I thought it was. I mean, I was kind of excited about it just being Perl. So Antia is, you know, really, really just Lucene, so I'm probably going to stick with that. But you should look at DuckDuckGo just for fun. KDE. I want to talk a little bit about KDE because I rather like it. And if you go to the website, thebadapples.info, then you'll see a little button on there that says there's, well, at least as of, like, right now, the moment I am recording this, 6 days until KDE 4.5 is released. So the KDE 4.5 release should be really cool. It's got a lot of sort of polish kinds of fixes that I could tell. I've been using 4.4.2 on my main laptop, and just yesterday, in fact, so much just yesterday that I haven't even had a chance to play around with it today, I put 4.4.5, which just hit Slackware current, onto my Acer Aspire netbook. But the thing that I really wanted to talk about KDE was the whole concept of KDE Everywhere, which, if you heard my interview with Celeste Lynn Paul at the Southeast Linux Fest, which was posted on Hacker Public Radio a little while ago, then you would know that there's a big push in the KDE world. How about KDE ecosphere? Or ecosystem. Then there's a push for KDE Everywhere and KDE being on all of your different devices. Okay, so here's what is going on with that idea, I think. And unfortunately, it is probably a dream that we can never achieve, but in an ideal world, perfect world, we've got computer operating systems abound. It's fine. There's no problem with that. No one says that there has to be but one. And even if I was going to actually sit down and run OS 10 for the rest of my natural life, then I would be able to, in this perfect idyllic world, just say, you know what, Mac Finder really, really is a horrible desktop environment, which it is, by the way. So I'm going to use KDE instead. And I would just be able to, you know, unplug the Finder and plug in KDE, and the system I'm running would be OS 10, but the environment that I'm actually living in would be KDE 4. And same goes for a Windows user, you know. They could say, oh, this whole Windows thing, you know, whatever that desktop is called, is no good. I'm going to turn that off and turn on KDE 4. And we'd be good to go. You could do that. Now, I realize that there are hacks around, especially, I mean, for sure I know that there are hacks around the Finder. Install X11, load it up. But I know from experience that that's not the solution that I'm talking about, because it's not like you're just putting new window decorations on the Windows. You're basically running an entirely separate system on top of OS 10. Just not what I mean. So I mean that you could have everything that you normally have, but instead of going out to your desktop and finding this underpowered, really badly designed, really not very flexible desktop called the Finder, you would have KDE 4, which is the best, or Fluxbox, or anything else for that matter. The point is modularity, and that's, of course, the Unix ideal, and so that's why we all get excited, you know, you and me, about the choice that we have in Linux. That's the big deal, right? Everyone says, oh, Linux is about choice. What does that mean? Well, one of the things that means is that we can actually have that ideal. We can say, oh, yes, I want to run this system on the back end. I want this, you know, Slackware, or I'd prefer to have Fedora, or I would prefer to have Debian, you know, whatever. And then you can put in whatever you want on top so that you're dealing with exactly what you want to deal with, both underneath all of the processes and the system and the surface stuff that you actually interact with as a dumb user. So this is a very great, great ideal. I love it. I wish that it were possible. I don't think that Windows and Mac are going to jump on board anytime soon. And oh well. And I mean, I think that's just a flaw in design, because even if you think about something like Haiku, minor though it may be, I mean, I don't think they're not exactly what I would say, you know, I wouldn't call them a major player right now. But they're there. They exist. And it's really cool that they exist, but if you look at the way they've designed their software, as far as I know, you know, there's not that modularity built in. You can't just say, oh, I love the Haiku backend, but I would rather run such and such a desktop environment on top. It's just the things weren't designed that way, and so that's yet again why this whole Linux and Unix thing is so great. But my point that I was really trying to get to is KDE everywhere. I know that they don't seem to relate that well, but here's what I was thinking of. So KDE everywhere would be, you could have KDE on your laptop, on your desktop, on your netbook, and on your mobile device. And you would have KDE everywhere. So this would be really cool. And right now, you can have components of KDE on, for instance, Windows. That one is exactly where it needs to be, as far as I can tell. I put some KDE components on a friend's laptop running Windows, and it works great. You know, it's got Dolphin, GwynView, Ocular, Kate, K-Write, all these different things. And I mean, I would have given next to anything to get that stuff on Skrillet's OS 10 install that we had to do for her when she came down to visit, or came over to visit, because she needed OS 10 for some of her jobs. And for the life of us, we couldn't find a good text editor, you know, a good basic text editor. And yes, I realize that there's text edit in OS 10, but no, that's actually not any good. The only real solutions was something like BB Edit, which is not free, or I think it's called Text Wrangler or something like that, which I think, again, wasn't free, I think it wasn't free, actually. And so it was really hard to find, a good, solid text editor, and I just kept wanting to put Kate on there, and I just couldn't do it because it just wasn't, we didn't have the time to sit down and get everything installed the way that we would have had to get everything installed in order for Kate to be a real solution, or even K-Write. You know, either of those two would have been exactly what she needed, and it just wasn't exactly where it needed to be yet. So, components, yes, but it would be even better to have the whole system. My point, again, that I'm really not making very quickly, is that one of the developers of you know, the whole KDE stuff, sort of came out with a mobile KDE little video that you can look online. If you go to notmart.org, then you can see this video that he did, and it's actually really, really, really cool. And so he's been working on the mobile KDE front. And so, I mean, he's got some kind of internet device, and I couldn't tell what it was. It could have been a N900. It could be a G1 phone, for all I know. I really couldn't tell from the video, but it's some kind of little mobile internet tablet thing, and he's got KDE on there, and it just looks so nice. The animation is smooth. It looks very familiar and friendly and KDE-ish. And I was just thinking, wow, that would be so cool if I could just get a package that says, you know, mobile KDE, drop it onto my Nokia N800, and I'd be running KDE on it. It'd be even cooler if I could do that with, you know, if I had like an iPhone and then drop KDE on there instead. That would be really, really cool. I mean, like I say, these are like perfect world scenarios that I just don't know if they're going to actually occur. But it's really neat to find the progress is being made on getting KDE on all these different devices. So check out notmart.org, and that's Martin is his first name. I don't remember which Martin this is. I've got too many Martins in my RSS feeds to remember, but it's Martin. He's got a good site. He does a lot of cool KDE things, so you can check that out. Now, in terms of getting, so KDE on the laptop, I mean, as long as you're running Linux or BSD, it's pretty easy. The mobile devices, I'm not clear on yet at all, but it is cool to see that they're making such interesting looking progress. Now, if you're going to put this on your netbook and you want to try the whole KDE netbook version, this is a lot like Migo, or Moblin, actually, because I haven't tried Migo, so it's a lot like Moblin for sure. And I tried it, and again, I don't love it because I don't like these specialized miniature interfaces. I'm just not into them. But I respect what they're doing, and it is kind of interesting to see. If you want to try it, and it's really easy. It's like a little drop-down menu selection. It's not hard to try at all. So just open up your netbook with KDE 4 installed. I forget when this got introduced. I want to say it was as far back as 4.2. I could be wrong about that. But you go to the system settings, and that is the name of the application. It's system settings. It's what you probably would have known as like K Control Center or something like that back in the day. So system settings is what they call their sort of system preferences. And then you go to your desktop control panel, which is in the look and feel subsection of system settings. So you go to desktop, and then on the left-hand side, you'll see desktop effects, multiple desktops, screen edges, screen saver, launch feedback, and workspace. So click on workspace, that's the little plasma logo, and you get two choices. You get a form factor, and within that you get either a desktop or a netbook. So change it to netbook, and it will rearrange your entire space and give you that sort of, you know, look, big icons in the middle of your desktop and no desktop as such. And when you launch something, it launches at full screen and all that other stuff. Again, I'm really not crazy about that model. I don't understand why people are. Whatever. It could be really cool for some people. It's definitely something to look at least. And obviously, so that's as easy as getting it on your laptop. I mean, it's not really that problematic as long as you're running Linux. And then, yeah, like I say, the mobile device is a little bit tougher, so I can't really give you any advice on how to get that on your mobile device yet, but it is happening, and it's cool, so check out those blogs. Now, in terms of the other KDE stuff that I wanted to talk about, there are two things that I wanted to talk about, but they kind of boil down to one thing. So the main thing that I want to talk about is compiling software specifically for KDE, because there is a very specific C++/KDE method of compiling things. And the sooner you get used to it, the sooner you will start being able to compile random stuff for KDE. And it's kind of nice. And by random stuff, I mean primarily plasmoids and little KDE editions and all the K apps and things like that. So that's mainly what I mean, I guess. So the two things that brought my attention to this lately was a little plasmoid called Fast User Switch. That is pretty clear as to what it is, I guess, but some guy noticed that there was no little button in the panel that says, you know, make me another user, so he could use his user account and then really quickly with a click of a button essentially switch over to his girlfriend's user account. And of course you see this in, like, I'm pretty sure GNOME usually has this, and OS X certainly has it as long as you turn it on. It's just a little icon of a user or whatever, and you click on it and you can switch really quickly. Okay, well that's nice, and on KDE you can do that. You can go up to the K menu, click, go over to like the fifth tab, and then go down to the third selection, switch user, and then switch user. And I mean that works. Or you could do K runner, and you know, which is like as a default, it's Alt F2. I have it mapped to Windows space, but whatever. Bring that up and then type in switch or user or something like that, and it should bring that up. But that's not quite the same, you know. So it's kind of nice to just have a little button up in your little system tray area or somewhere where you can just hit it and switch. So that was a great little easy plasmoid that this guy wrote. It's funny too, when anyone writes this kind of stuff, you always get like such stupid comments sometimes, you know. People are like, oh, well, why do you need this? You have it, you know, you can just do it with KRunner. You can do that in the K menu. It's like, yeah, but his requirement for what he wanted was a button to click, you know, without going into lots of submenus and being able to switch users. So simple, and yet everyone's like, well, why did you do that? You can just do it this way. Yeah, but I didn't want to do it that way. I wanted to do it this way. That's why I programmed it this way. But anyway, that was just something that I noticed. And obviously the strength of open source software, right? Free software enables us to do random things that, yeah, they might be a little bit extraneous, or they might be very specific as to exactly how we want to do something, but isn't that kind of why we're using this stuff? So anyway, that was a sort of a tangent, but the thing that he programmed, he posted, of course, is in a Git repository, and I thought, you know, this would be a really good little mini how-to on how to get something from Git, and then how to install it, and make KDE aware of the fact that you installed it. Let's just start with fast user switch, and then we'll talk about the KRunner dictionary, because there's one little extra tip on there that I wanted to mention. So the fast user switch, for instance, if you're going to sit down and you just decide, okay, I really want to pimp out my KDE, I want to grab some new plasmoids from KDE Look or KDE App, I'm going to compile them from source, and then I'm going to install them on my KDE system. The first thing you want to do is, well, set up your environment a little bit. So you need to make sure that you've got a C++ compiler installed. A lot of us, some of us may have GCC installed, but GCC alone doesn't do C++. It's the GNU C compiler. So you need the GNU C++ compiler, which generally speaking is referred to as either GCC with C++ compiler, or, you know, with C++ support or something like that, or it's G++. Sometimes people will call it that. By people, I mean repositories. So if you're searching through a repository and you want to make sure that you've got this C++ thing installed, you might want to do a search for GCC and grep C++, or you might want to do a search for G++. But either way, eventually you'll find GCC with C++ parts included, or rather just the C++ parts for GCC. So install that, and you'll also want to install something called CMake. That is the letter C and the word make, all one word, all probably lowercase. Now CMake is a cross-platform makefile generator, and I know that because I typed in man CMake. What exactly that means, like the really, really technical stuff, I don't really know. But what it basically does, from what I can tell and from what the man page sort of indicates, is that it will look at your system. It looks at a cmakelists.txt file that should be included with the source code, and it figures out what is going to happen when you type in the word make after you do the CMake. So you typically need that for these KDE applications, I've noticed. And then for this specific example, you'll want to install Git, G-I-T. And for other examples, you know, for other projects that aren't using Git, you might need to install something else, like SVN or Mercurial or whatever. So for this one, we're going to do Git. So if you've never done, if you've never, like, just gone out and cloned a Git repository before, it's actually really, really simple. All you do is what I do is I cd into my /src folder, which is where I keep all the source code that I download. So cd /src, and then you do a git clone, so that's git space clone space git clone /gatorius.org/fast_user_switch/fast_user_switch.git, and hold on, don't hit enter yet, but so that would clone that specific repository into a folder. You can define what folder it creates and populates by adding at the end /fast_user_switch. Or if you wanted to call it something else, you could call it something else. FUS, you know, who cares? Whatever you want to name the directory. If you don't give that, Git seems to name the folder, I think, what it is named on, you know, over on the Git repository side. I think it just uses the same name. That usually makes a lot of sense, but sometimes I find that I want a little bit more specificness to it. You know, maybe I want fast user switch unstable or something like that. Maybe I want to give it some kind of specific name. So you can define the folder name by adding a folder at the end of the git clone command. And notice that we didn't have to make that directory. Git will make that directory for us. Okay, so that will clone all the source code, and in this case it'll go really fast because it's a little bit of code for a little tiny do-nothing plasmoid. In other cases, like if you're cloning, or I don't think they use Git actually, but if you're doing a mercurial pull-down of, or checkout, whatever they call it, of Blender, it'll take a long time. So it just depends on how much source code you're actually going out and getting. But in this case, it should happen. It should have, if you just did it, it's probably finished now. So then you cd into fast user switch. And then you can make directory, make dir space build, and then you cd into build. That technically isn't absolutely required, but it seems to be the way that most KDE developers do it, so that's what I do. And then you do cmake space dot dot space dash dcmake underscore install underscore prefix equals accent mark KDE 4 dash config space dash dash prefix accent mark. So if you listen to my previous episode about bash, you know exactly what's going on here, right? So you do cmake space dot dot. So obviously the dot dot says look at the folder previous to where we are, our parent folder. And so it's essentially telling cmake, look in the folder behind us, one folder up, look in there for that cmake list.txt and do what that tells you to do, you know, generate the make file from that. And then you say space dash dcmake underscore install underscore prefix. All that is in capital letters, by the way. And that's simply defining a variable of dcmake install prefix. And it's defining that as whatever resolves to KDE 4 dash config space dash dash prefix. So obviously in that command, it will process those accent marks first and figure out what your KDE 4 dash config file folder is. Typically this is like /user/bin. Sometimes it might be /user/local/bin. You might want to define it yourself. You can certainly do that. Instead of doing the accent mark KDE 4 dash config space dash dash prefix, you could say prefix equals /user/local/bin or whatever you want it to be. But if you use the accent marks, then it just looks at your current settings, you know, the sort of the default of your system and uses that. So that's a good thing to do. So you hit that, cmake processes a couple of things. You'll see it kind of like doing what generally when you do a ./configure, that's basically what it's doing. And then you hit, then you type in make, and then it makes the software. And again, because this is a small little plasmoid, it doesn't take that much time. Other things could take a lot longer, like if you're compiling KOffice or something. And then you do a make install as root. So whether you do a su-c quote make install end quote, or a sudo make install, whatever, that's what you do. Type in your password, it installs the thing. Now here's the peculiar thing about KDE, is that KDE, I guess, has a little secret database backend somewhere that kind of keeps track of what your preferences are. For instance, in the desktop, when you click on a .mp4 file, does it open in Xen? Or does it open in Dragon? Does it open in MPlayer? Like, what happens? Well, it could change from moment to moment depending on what kind of file this is. But what you can do, of course, is define exactly what you want to happen. So you right-click on it, and you go down to Open With, and then you can tell exactly what to open with. And if you check the little box that says Remember This for Next Time, or whatever it says, and press OK, then it updates its little database. And now every time you hit a .mp4, it's going to open in exactly what you told it to open with that one time. So that's one of those things that when I'm giving a computer to someone or setting it up for someone, and it's KDE, obviously, then that's one of those things that I try to do before I give it to them. Make sure that I've gone through and set every, I guess they're called MIME types, every MIME type that I can think of, all the MP3 files, all the MP4 files, all the OGG files, all the .txt files. You know, I don't want some of them opening up in Kate, some of them opening up in Kwrite, and then others opening up in Kword. I mean, that's just as confusing to people. So I go in and set as many of these things to sensible defaults, and it's typically guided by whatever their system was previously. If it's a Mac user, all the .txt things are going to open up in Kwrite, because it's a simple text edit kind of application, and people are going to be used to that. If it's a .mp3 or .ogg, it's going to open up in Amarok or some such thing as that. So that's what I do. And then in order for KDE to know about this plasmoid, you need to tell its little database that it exists. And the way to do that is this little command that you might as well just try to remember, and you won't because it's so weird, but it's kbuild SYCOCA4. So it looks like kbuild SYCOCA4. That's how I have to remember it, except that I always get all those syllables mixed around and always end up typing in kbuild coca psi for or something like that. But anyway, it's kbuild SYCOCA4. That is the command. It's all one word. It looks really strange. But what it does is it updates that little secret database and says, okay, whenever you type in, when you launch KRunner and type in switch user, now one of the plasmoids that will be available to you is fast user switch. Or when you go to add a widget, there, you know, the fast user switch will be added, will be in your little list of widgets. Or anywhere that you can access a little plasmoid, KDE will know about it. So that's an important step to do, and if you don't know to do it, then you wouldn't do it, and you might be confused as to why KDE doesn't seem to know that plasmoid exists on your system, even though you installed it. So do that command, and then from then on, you can add it. So you can right-click on the panel or add it to wherever you want to add it, and then you'll have a little fast user switch button right there that you can always use and switch user accounts really, really fast. It's really, really neat. Neater still is the KRunner dictionary that Jason Donenfeld programmed. This is a really, really cool little plugin, and this was one that I got so excited about because I do a lot of writing, actually. I kind of write a lot. And one of the things that I'm just always struggling with is quick and simple check on my spelling or a check on the exact definition of a word. And there's a little dictionary plasmoid that I do have on my desktop sometimes, but it's not that convenient. But KRunner is supremely convenient. You hit Windows spacebar and it pops up on your screen. You can do all kinds of cool things in KRunner. Did you know you could do math in KRunner? Yes, it is true. Hit Windows space, or if you have it bound for some inexplicable reason to Alt F2, which doesn't seem to like exactly just be all that accessible, but whatever, then hit that and KRunner comes up. And KRunner, in case you don't know what I'm talking about, is the little magic field that pops open, and I think the other iterations of it, the thing that I always thought of it as substituting for, it was something called Quicksilver on Mac OS X. Quicksilver itself was sort of like Spotlight on steroids. If you have no idea what I'm talking about, I do apologize. I think it's like GNOME Do. I know that. So if you use GNOME and you've ever heard of GNOME Do, then that's pretty much the same thing. And the cool thing about KRunner is that you can just do all kinds of stuff. So, like, literally, if you hit KRunner and then type in equal sign, you know, 3.14 divided, you know, slash 7, then you get 3.14 divided by 7, and it calculates the answer for that, which is, of course, 0.4485714, 2857143. So there you go, math right there in KRunner. You can also search through your Nepomuk, your little desktop index, if you do that, which of course I don't, but I've set it up for other people. You can execute random commands. You can just type in, you know, xterm-cr green-br black-fg green return, and it will open up xterm. You can search through contacts if you have that activated. Kate sessions, Conqueror sessions, whatever. It's a really great little device, little application, and it's one of those things that they could just keep expanding and expanding and expanding forever, and I think that everything would be useful. So if you launch KRunner and you can see that there's a wrench, little wrench tool or a spanner, and then a system activity button on the left. And so if you hit the wrench button, then you can actually configure exactly what KRunner does, because it's got all these different little plugins, which is really, really neat. Infinitely useful, infinitely expandable. And so Jason Donenfeld has written a dictionary plugin for it. And so you simply type in define and then the word, and voila, it tells you the definition of the word. So yeah, I was really excited about this, and I commented on his blog when he announced that it was out, and he was saying it might be in 4.6, which of course is, you know, I mean, that seems like an eternity right now. So I said, wow, it'd be really cool to have this right now. And he actually emailed me, which was just really, really appreciated and completely not necessary, but he actually emailed me and he updated his blog and said, gave instructions exactly on how to get this right now, you know, to actually compile it into KDE today and have it right now. So I was really excited about that. But what was really cool, and the reason I'm kind of going on about it right now, is because I learned a new command from this. So just for reinforcement, let's do the same thing. So we've already got C++ or GCC with C++ installed. We've got Git. Well, if you don't have SVN, you need to install that. And in your repository, you should just be using Slackware because that comes with it by default. But if you're not, then in your repository, it would be called subversion probably. So subversion, that's the command that you issue to get subversion is going to be SVN, but the name of the package itself is subversion. So install that. We've already got CMake installed, so we're good to go there. So you do SVN space CO space SVN :// anons SVN /home/KDE.org/home/KDE/trunk/KDE review/plasma/runners/dictionary. And then you do, so that's the SVN repository that you're looking at. And then you do space dictionary-krunner. And that's the name of the folder that it's going to dump everything into. Again, it's going to be a fast checkout. It doesn't, not that much code going on here. And then you could CD into dictionary-krunner. And then on his blog, Jason doesn't have the make dir build, but I always do a make dir build anyway. So you do make dir build and then CD into build. And then you do cmake dot dot dash dcmake underscore install underscore prefix equals /user/local/bin or, you know, whatever. You could do the accent mark KDE dash config space dash dash prefix accent mark instead, whatever. And then that runs cmake. And then you do a make and then a make install. And then do you remember the magical command for the database? Go ahead and say it. Louder. Yes, kbuild syconca 4. Okay, so that updates your little database. Now here's the cool command that his blog revealed to me. It's kquit app and then space krunner, and then you launch krunner again. It's really cool. So if you want to selectively quit something like that, then kquit app it's sort of like a kill, you know, but it's probably more specific to like the little individual components within KDE 4. So kquit app and then space krunner, and then you launch krunner again, and that way you get the new instance of krunner with all of its awareness of what plugins are available to it. So that's cool stuff, and that's how you compile for KDE, and those are some of the trick commands that you can use in relation to compiling for KDE. So check some of these out. Disclaimer, of course, I don't have krunner dictionary installed on my main laptop. My main laptop is my stable Slacker Media laptop, which would, of course, just be Slackware with all my little multimedia stuff in it. So I don't tend to add and pimp that out very much at all, because I figure anything that I'm not completely familiar with and that hasn't passed the entirely flawless stability test that Patrick Volterding and the Slackware team put the systems through, I don't need it on my main laptop. But I do have it installed on my netbook, and it is very cool. So do check it out, but not on your ultimately stable, ultimately precious and important, mission-critical computer. Okay, so have fun with that. Okay, with all that KDE stuff, all I want is some coffee with a K. K-O-F-F-E-E. So go get yourself some coffee with a K. And come right back, and we'll dive into Fusion Linux and listener feedback. It is kind of hard to argue that coffee shouldn't be spelled with a K, actually, because I believe that coffee itself is sort of a transliteration. I don't think that it's like an American word. I don't think we can claim that as an American or even British term. So I think we could argue quite seriously that coffee should be spelled with a K rather than a C. But then again, I mean, if we're going to start talking like that, I guess we could actually argue that the letter C itself is not really all that necessary. But I know there are some people who really like the letter C and don't want to see it go away. But personally, I think that we should probably consider, kind of rethink the necessity of C. But that's a different topic for a different time. So I wanted to talk about something called Fusion Linux. which is something I had not heard of, but kind of rolled through the Fedora RSS feeds, and I just thought I'd kind of mention it because it looked kind of interesting to me for some very specific reasons and purposes. So Fusion Linux is a respin of Fedora with all the evil software included, which is, of course, really great if you are setting up a computer for someone and you need it to be as fast and headache-free and kind of look how everything works right out of the box as possible. So Fusion Linux you can think of essentially as what Mint is to Ubuntu. Fusion is to Fedora. So this could be something that is really helpful because I know that I have been, you know, over at someone's place, they've got that spare computer. They keep hearing me rant and rave about Linux, and they just finally, the curiosity gets the best of them, and they say, well, please install it on this computer. I really don't like doing that because it's one of those things where you're going to install it, and then you're going to leave and never talk to them again. Well, you might talk to them again, but, you know, it's not like you're not going to be there to guide them through this wonderful special Fedora or this special Linux introductory, you know, kind of honeymoon that they're about to embark on, which can sometimes be quite scary because, you know, they've got all those typical dumb Windows user tricks that they think that they should be doing. You know, they'll go to their favorite site and they'll download the Windows executable and then they'll try to run it, and it's not good for anybody. Fusion Linux will at least get them to a point where they're not going to have to go out to those sites and, you know, try to download the MP3 plugin for iTunes, you know, and try to get it on their Linux box. They're not going to have to do that because when they click on that MP3 file, it's going to start playing for them, and you didn't have to set that up. See, in real life, I know that if I'm going to be setting up a computer for someone, I know that I've got a certain workflow that I do, and I'll take their computer and I'll take it home and I'll say, I'll get you this in a week and no sooner. And that way you can sit there and you can install the Linuxes on it, and then you can, you know, make sure that KDE is configured such that when you click on one thing, it actually opens up in the correct platform, in the correct application, and so on and so forth. You can make sure that they've got support for the MP3s and the MP4s and the H.264s and all these other different things. You can make sure that they have the applications that you know that they're going to be looking for, you know, your torrent client and your some kind of media player and a photo application, whether it's Digicam or Picasa, if they're used to Picasa, which would be a pity because Picasa is sort of a wine hack. So yeah, all that other stuff, right? So if I have a week to do that, then that's great because I can customize it for them and feel pretty good about what I'm handing over to them in the end. If I can't do that and they're just insisting I must have Linux, that's one of the cases where Ubuntu's just not going to cut it for so many reasons. One, because even Ubuntu, you have to do a lot of like customization to get all those weird things going, right? Like Flash and MP3 and stuff like that. So if you've got Fusion Linux or Linux Mint, then you can install that and hey, they're up and running and you can feel fairly secure that they're not going to need anything too weird too soon. So these are important projects, I think, in a way, and they're also, of course, detrimental to everything that we hold dear and completely evil and atrocious. The conflict between do I need something that just works or do I really just want to spread propaganda about how great free software is and how you don't really need anything else in your life, so why are you asking for MP3 support? There's that conflict there that you have to kind of resolve in yourself. But for me, in real life, like when someone asks for something, the fact of the matter is that I don't want to put Ubuntu on their system, so I would much rather do a Fedora install. And, I mean, frankly, yeah, if I'm not going to be there to guide them through every little step of the way, I think Fusion Linux would probably be something I would look at. So if you are like me and you were looking for something like Mint, except not so Ubuntu-ish, then Fusion Linux might be the way to go. Take a look at it. I've not tried it, not given it to anyone to try. You know, it's just something that came through the RSS feed, and I thought it was kind of interesting. So it is at fusionlinux.org. Okay, actually, I just looked at the running time of this thing so far, and it's already like up to 40 minutes. So, listener feedback that I've got is not going to only be 40 minutes. So instead of continuing on, let's end this episode now, and the listener feedback will come next episode. So stay tuned in that sense, but not right now, because it's over. So thanks for listening. Bye. So that was The Bad Apples, episode 17, season 5. Thank you very much for listening. My name is Klaatu, and you can find me online lots of different places. You can find me at, well, you can find the show at thebadapples.info. That is thebadapples.info. Or you can go to klaatu.hackerpublicradio.org. You can find me by email at klaatu@hackerpublicradio.org or klaatu@member.fsf.org. You can find me on the interwebs, on the interweb messaging services, Jabber specifically, at notklaatu@jabber.org. You can find me on IRC as notklaatu, usually hanging out on irc.freenode.net in the channel Ogcast Planet. And I think that's about it. So, again, thanks for listening, and stay free. Something inspiring like that. See ya.
Push me around.